Oh dear, Taylor. Never mind. Okay, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Highs today of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a cloudy day, but generally feeling quite mild.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
So, Kat, when you were actually sort of with your full entourage with Nick Elliott and you were over with one of the finest exhibitions that you could ever have actually encountered in Cheshire this year, you didn't endanger any local species, did you?
Oh, absolutely not. No animals were harmed at all.
Precisely. Share with us, because that was one of the events, obviously, you got involved with as an ace PR guru with Nick Elliott and company. This was Size Matters.
Size Matters exhibition. Yes, it was absolutely brilliant. It was actually a world first. Wonderful, massive, massive pieces of artwork, 8 metres high, 35 feet. They were huge, dwarfed you. There were 15, all very, very beautifully produced, and of Nick Elliott's of photography. So they were all well-known musicians, and they were black and white, and they were very, very arty, and 70,000 people saw them. Incredible.
Oh, amazing.
And the great thing is, of course, very soon, in 2016, it'll be going on tour.
Well, that's the plan, but we've got more things afoot, actually. So it may be, morphing into something different, but
it's quite frankly, phenomenal.
The tension's building.
Oh, it is.
Clearly, you are one of those fine people who, when you're not actually doing some wonderful work at the University of Lincoln, and, of course, co-producing Nick Elliott's sound and Nick's vision and so on. It's on tonight, by the way, 7:02.
Excellent.
On this very station.
Listening.
Yeah, exactly. You might well be approached by the likes of Claire and indeed Mary for, say, internships and such like, or indeed not necessarily internships, workplace, etc. What's been your experience of that? Do you normally say, oh Lord, you know, another student, or is it great slave labour?
No, my attitude has never been slave labour at all.
Of course not.
No. But I'm sure that some employers do actually believe that to be the case. I mean, I always look at it as an opportunity for both parties, because it's great experience for people coming in and, getting some real life experience, because it's all very well learning it in the classroom. But when you come out into the real world, it all adapts quite differently. And from the employer's perspective, I think it's wonderful, because they're getting some additional support in there, and the fact that you can actually mentor somebody on the job is a great experience.
Mary, from your own point of view, as an English undergraduate at present, what was it about Lincoln that kind of drew you here, or was it just a case of, well, it's Lincoln?
Well, I do think the city is a major part when you walk in and you think it's so... Well, for me, coming from London, it's quite small, so actually it was lovely
really?
To commute.
London? Is that some sort of in London?
So, actually, in a smaller scale, everything is so close to you. Like, you're always 5 minutes away from the hub of the city and the uni. But also, the course itself, everybody was so friendly. So I went into our first lecture and they were like, don't worry, don't panic.
They were lying, of course.
Yeah.
It's all well. And now you're actually approaching your final term.
Yes.
5 terms almost down, 6th one there. Is it a case of, there's that sense of anticipation, or is it a case of, well, I've done my bit as a London citizen, I can go back to London now, fully civilised?
Partly, but no, I'll be so sad to leave, I think, because it's become such a big part to us, I think, as well. Like, I love the studying, I love all of the parts, I think, to it. So it will be really sad, I think, to put that to an end.
Well, you could always come back.
Well,
yeah, Lincoln is not the end of the world,
no.
Despite what the rail links have said.
They don't let you back in once you leave.
That's it. Out you go.
Not the Royston Vasey of the East Midlands, although that's an interesting line in its own routine. Kat, moving on, we'll be talking to Richard Fitzwilliams, another publicist, but also royal correspondent and film critic, so a chance to actually talk about a range of things like that. He's going to be talking about Black Mass. He wants to hold fire a wee bit on Bridge of Spies. Interesting. Ooh. Possibly it's coding. All this and more after that lass who apparently it's got an entourage that actually affects the local wildlife.
I'm so glad you made time to see me. How's life? Tell me, how's your family? I haven't seen them in a while. You've been good, busy, your turn around.
We'll be back in December in a matter of days, really. Had an interesting text from Emma Tinnerson, which actually she sent last night with the classic phrase, I'm outside the studio. Outside the studio, can you let me in? Well, obviously, we did let her in. She managed to get here last night. This morning, Claire, what happened? You left together.
I mean, she's just disappeared.
Just after she said, it's all right, I'll be able to stick around for the full 2 hours. I don't know which time zone she's working in. Never mind. A reminder, we have in the studio the fabulous Claire Margerrison, the equally fabulous wonder that is Mary Dancy. And we also have Cat Ace Publicist. Yes, Richard Fitzwilliams, another publicist, is in the studio at this end. Isn't that phenomenal?
The more the merrier.
Oh, definitely.
Exactly. However, worry not, Richard. Your role as a royal correspondent is still safe because Kat is more into rock publicity and rock music, rock stars.
Yes,
and various
no, I don't think that I could be a rival. Hard, I don't know.
Yes. You could give it a go.
Collaboration?
Absolutely.
It could be Kat and Richard. Richard and Kat could be...
exhibition which has links to rock music. That's the thing to put on.
Oh, absolutely.
and Richard, exciting news, as will be revealed on next Wednesday's Midweek Drive, both Kat and yourself are in the 2016 Adventures in Broadcasting calendar.
Yay! Not the naked ones, I hope.
Kat, I really do not know which sort of dimension your fantasy life exists. Please. Yeah? Lord. Yeah? We're saving that for 2018. Anyway, as we proceed down the line, it would be remiss of us, as I managed to catch this particular piece, and given your royal correspondent credentials, Richard, not to say, wasn't Prince Charles such a miserable so-and-so? You just think, Prince Charles, please, you know, you're heading to be a bit more positive. Don't say, well, global warming, that's what's caused all the Syrian crisis. He might well be right, but to say it's going to get worse, please, upbeat, please. That's all I will say, Richard.
Well, I mean, I watched this. In fact, I saw the trail. My own feeling was that it is important to bear in mind when watching this, and I'm not suggesting he was upbeat, he most emphatically was not. The interview was actually half an hour at 8 o'clock on Sky News. Sky should have waited before they showed that, because the news that particular day, Brussels still on lockdown, memories, and they'll be extraordinarily intense for such a long time over the atrocity in Paris. So many news stories, defense review and so forth. Cameron is the Prime Minister making a pitch today for the intention to bomb ISIL in Syria. I mean, all of this was going on at the same time, and you had what shall I will certainly admit was a change in mood. And I think one thing I thought listening to this was the prince was indeed apocalyptic. One of the things I think it's very important to be, if you're that apocalyptic, you're talking about chaos, you're talking about the need to not to bust nature's bank, which he compared to the financial crisis. We ought to have, I think, more examples. He talked about Sweden, which had managed to reduce carbon emissions, where the economy had grown. And I think it should have been shorter, punchier, and you're absolutely
Richard,
right.
you should have done it.
You have to liven up your audience.
I know.
A certain amount of charisma and levity,
If we're being absolutely... shall we say, sceptical about this whole thing, you might think, Sky, who runs Sky? Oh, yes, it's that Republican chap, Rupert Murdoch. There might have been an agenda there, just a thought, might have been an agenda, not possibly to actually guide the thing.
Absolutely. In fact, Robert Jobson of the Evening Standard, the Royal commentator for the Standard, pointed out it was absolutely the wrong time to show that, because it hit notes that, quite frankly, when you... It
had me almost on my knees praying for Queen Elizabeth to maintain her reign for at least another 40 years, you know, so we can maintain Elizabethan routines, because honestly, you know, Charlie chuckles, even if he chooses the name George, it's not going to work at all. Anyway, that's destroyed my right.
I think it's a very interesting point you've raised, because when I watched it, I wondered what is the next day's press thing to bring, and the papers decided largely to ignore it. Which is rather interesting, because I think what was done by Sky, the actual timing of when they broadcasted. I mean, the climate change conference isn't for some time. Mm. It was quite extraordinary to put it on there.
And Kat, as you will probably attest to, timing in public relations is everything.
Well, it Absolutely. Is, isn't it? Absolutely. And when you hear that example there, it was just a complete, mess up on all counts by the sound of it.
I thought he'd been replaced by Nick Elliott in one of his moody moments.
Oh, dear.
Sorry,
oh.
Nick.
What a diva he is.
Let's move on
Kat,
to
it. Did you watch it?
Do you know, I haven't seen it yet. No, Alex was mentioning it to me the other day, and I haven't been able to find the time to find it out on the online, but I will catch up with it. Was it pretty poor?
Well, I mean, I have to say that Alex's comments, which were not echoed elsewhere, it was in the papers I was looking for mention. There'd been a mention because of the trail, and it was, I think, decided to play it down because, frankly, it was certainly not...
He's like his father. He'll be going down that line before too long. Oh, no!
Yes.
No. I mean, what you very, very clearly got is somebody 40 years ago, he made this issue his own, and he was the only one who was campaigning about it. Now it's mainstream, and we all know that. But the facts are that you have to be punchy when you're putting across a message. That's what Alex is trying to say.
Oh, not that we're being patronised at all, but in terms of the whole thing, I speak...
I have to mention, by the way, with my royal hat on, of course, that the state visit of the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh to Malta begins today, and this, of course, coincides with a couple of heads of government meeting beginning tomorrow. And it's one of the periods in their marriage where they can think back that perhaps the happiest of all, when Philip was appointed to HMS Chequers and then subsequently to his first command of HMS Magpie when he was a naval officer, and she was a princess, the Queen was a naval wife, and that was between 1941 and 1951. And frankly, I think that Malta's always held very, very fond memories for them.
I remember it so well.
It's the ideal venue to have a Commonwealth conference, which I have to say, 2 years ago, Colombo, which the Prince of Wales represented the Queen at, was not, for reasons which deal with human rights,
the best choice. Let's move on, Richard. Let's maintain our positivity. Let's practice what we preach and say, let's continue to a young woman in her 20s, Therese Bellivet, a clerk working in a Manhattan department store and dreaming of a more fulfilling life when she meets Carol, an alluring woman trapped in a loveless, convenient marriage. Directed by Todd Haynes, you're going to share with us now, Carol.
I am indeed, and I would say that it's not often that you have this extraordinary coincidence, but having recently, and I hope you have enjoyed it, Brooklyn, Sayosa Ronan, so superb. She too works in a Manhattan department store, so two at a time. I mean, we're going on to review Black Mass set in Boston about an extraordinary collaboration between gangsters and the police, and subsequently, do not neglect to see Spotlight, which shines the light on the horrors of child abuse by priests in Boston. So it's quite interesting that there are links between different films being released at the moment or released shortly. And Carol is directed by Todd Haynes. He has a fondness for looking at an era which I think most of us regard as repressive, and an era which I think most of us are very glad that has long been over, the 1950s, and Far From Heaven with Julianne Moore and Dennis Haysbert, but he scored there. And here we have a great deal of repression on unhappiness, but also where love can flourish. It's set in 1950s. In the 1950s and in New York, and here you have a story of forbidden love in a male-dominated society, to put it very, very mildly. It's dominated for me by Rooney Mara's sensitive, beautifully timed, vulnerable performances, Therese. I mean, she is absolutely exquisite, and it's extraordinary to say this, but given the fact that Cate Blanchett is such a superb actress playing Carol, of the two of them, Mara not only dominated for me, but I was rather surprised that there was quite a lot of dialogue from Cate Blanchett that I missed. as the older woman who is going through this divorce and fighting for her daughter, when they meet, firstly in the department store and subsequently for lunch, and her husband becomes suspicious, and she'd had an affair years ago with Abby, played very, very well by Sarah Paulson, and tracks her down, sends a private eye. This becomes a very dramatic movie. It's very touching. And what fascinated me is not only an insight into a period which is thankfully such a long time ago, which is so deeply, deeply bigoted and prejudiced, but also the sensitivity in which several of the performers, but most particularly Rooney Mara, as I mentioned, as Therese, but also Sarah Paulson's Abby, they play their role so well.
Okay.
She's spoiled us very effectively, but Kyle Chandler, he's appropriately revolting as Hodge, the husband, seeking custody of the child, and their child... You do wonder...
Richard, you've made the points very eloquently as ever. Let's throw it open to the studio. We've had a look at the trailer. Kat, is this something which you think, well, that seems like a jolly little number, Rooney and prejudiced, bigoted 1950s America, heart of the heartland of McCarthy-era trials and all sorts of things? Not that that's going to be the movie.
I lived in love flourishing or nothing during the period.
Yeah.
Well, some tough themes going on there. But from the trailer there, it looks absolutely wonderful in terms of the costumes and the positioning and everything. The acting, even just from what I've seen there, looks as if it's superb. So with a theme of love as well, crikey, what's not to like?
Does it conquer all?
Almost.
Claire?
The aesthetic of it is really, really appealing.
Beautiful.
And I think as well, often gay love, particularly between women, is quite fetishized, and it doesn't look like that. It looks like it's approaching...
It's a male fantasy,
blood.
Let's face it. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And it looks like it's approaching the theme of love rather than making it just like a sex thing, which I think is, looks
so
pretty
crass. Really. And Mary?
Well, it does look very authentic, which is quite exciting, and it does look very intense with the drama from what we've seen in the trailer as well. So,
and that's with Richard Fitzwilliams as the audio commentator.
Yeah.
Just looking at the images. Amazing.
So I'm very excited.
It is an intense movie, and its sincerity comes across, I think, well. And I do agree, I mean, just as in Brooklyn, so evocative of beautiful period sense. Really, really impressive there.
So from there, keeping the Boston theme going, you'd almost have a tea party there. In 1970s South Boston, 20 years after, of course, the events of Carol, but not connected, unless there's some dimension that we're not aware of as yet, FBI agent John Connolly persuades Irish mobster James Whitey Bulger to collaborate with the FBI. I wonder if they would have chosen the name James Whitey Bulger had they known about the later connotations in the 1980s,
yeah,
but 1990s.
Maybe not.
Drama tells the story of an unholy alliance and a collaboration with the FBI and the Italian mob, which spiralled out of control, allowing Whitey to evade law enforcement, consolidate power, and continue, please, Richard. What else does Johnny Depp get up to in this little number?
Well, no spoilers from me.
Of course not.
The facts of the matter are that he becomes a character who is increasingly unhinged. Since the police are using him, he is able to do pretty well what he likes, and this is one of the most extraordinary aspects of this movie. This is a true story. This sucks it to you. It holds you in its icy grip, because what you're looking at is so repellent, and yet it's so powerfully handled. I was very impressed. Director Scott Cooper, who did Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges, which was so successful, in 2 hours, he certainly held me in a film that stars Johnny Depp in certainly a sinister and charismatic, and he's a psychopath. He gives a brilliant performance, and I was absolutely riveted by this movie. I agree there are certain flaws in it. For example, Benedict Cumberbatch, who just so happens to be the Massachusetts State Senate president, and Billy, he plays Billy, who's Whitey's brother. How the same mother produced two children so unlike each other, I could hardly imagine. But I have to say, it's quite extraordinary, where you have FBI agent John Connolly, played by Joe Edgerton, who I last saw playing Pharaoh in Exodus Gods and Kings. He gives a wonderful performance here, someone who can in fact project his own power with the FBI by using Bulger as, in inverted commas, an informer. They take down the Anguillo brothers, who are, of course, bulgers, rivals in gangland. But once the police have claimed that, once the FBI have claimed this is a success, that means, basically, backed by Connolly and another officer, Morris, who's a decent cop but believes he's basically doing the right thing, what happens? You've got this unholy alliance. And when Bulger goes progressively more and more insane, what happens and how, in fact, does this real-life scenario end? And when I say end, don't leave the cinema until it has ended. But no more and no spoilers from me. I have to say that this film was, the reason it scored particularly, there are violent scenes, visually it's extremely powerful, but it's the way, not only a superb cast, which includes Kevin Bacon, Dakota Johnson, it's that it holds you in its grip. The scenes begin and you're not sure how they're going to end. And it's so well scripted that it really, really is tense, dramatic. And I was very, very impressed with this movie. It's loathsomely atmospheric because what you're basically seeing is a gangster given carte blanche by the FBI, and it is absolutely amazing. Boston under the spotlight, to be sure, and an absolutely amazing performance by Johnny Depp, and this is well-directed, scripted, and it really grips you.
And he looks just like his role as Hunter S. Thompson, another biopic back in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Because obviously he's gone for the follically challenged look. There we are, that's Johnny for you. And not, of course, the Jack Sparrow routine, which I thought he might have challenged. He could have channeled his Jack Sparrow in a nature.
Getting Sparrow out of it, the memories. I'm seeing most of those movies, they were terrific hits at the box office. Who can grudge that? But my goodness me, they were not only a little different, but a little painful sometimes.
Maybe a bit of Edward Scissorhands working for the mob.
So let's just mention that co-writer of this movie was Jez Butterworth, and anyone who saw Jerusalem and Mark Rylance's performance there will know how good he is.
Yeah, but you know, there we are. Let's move on. Mary Dancy, what did you think of Black Mass? Is it the sort of thing you say, yes, I'm going to get the entire family to go and see that one?
Well, definitely, I definitely want to see it, so I think Richard sold it very well. And also, I am actually quite excited to see Johnny Depp's performance because, like we were saying, he has got this history where it's a bit more towards Edward Scissorhands, kind of gothic Tim Burton. So I'm quite actually excited.
He's on
excited.
The line now, actually. I've done more than that, honestly.
I'm excited to see what he has to bring, yeah, so definitely going to go see it.
And Claire?
Yeah, it looks really, really atmospheric. And also, I think that, like Mary says, with such a kind of very well-known cast, it'd be quite interested to see how they transcend their sort of previous performances and what they've previously done to be their own characters in this film.
Jessica
it begins Waters. In the 1970s, and it's fascinating when you look at different eras and see how well both Carol and Black Mass have managed to evoke
the 50s and the 70s. Richard, breaking news from the Midweek Drive at Front, a text from no less a personage than our New Zealand and British correspondent Jessica Ward, who says, and I quote Kat, "Morning, Alex. I slept through my alarm today. So I am extremely sorry for my rudeness." That's quite heart-rending, really.
Her.
I think so. I think so. Okay. Yeah, it's all right, Jessica.
We still love you. Don't worry.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think, the Bulgers gang...
Are you suggesting, Richard, we should actually send the mob round to actually sort Jessica out? I mean, it's a bit harsh. You know? I mean, saying you're going to be sleeping with the fishes in the Brayford pool, it's going to be... Yeah.
Of course, he's heading a bed.
I've been very careful to avoid any spoilers
of course.
That actually happens in this movie because I rather like Carol, that'll hold you hooked as the plot develops.
So, Kat, will you be checking out Black Mass?
I will. It looks very, very intense, doesn't it? And I always think there's something mystical about that world, the underworld, isn't there? And just looking at that trailer there, Johnny Depp looks completely different, obviously physically, but the way that he was portraying that character... he really did live it, didn't he? Just in those few expressions, there's a lot of underlying.
I think he's kind of restoring, because there was a time where Johnny Depp was the, Eating Gilbert Grape, that's Leonardo DiCaprio, but the obviously Edward Scissorhands, etc. And there was a great deal, and then it seemed as though he went kind of too commercial. A lot of critics, like Richard, said, "Oh, he's lost the whole thing." No, maybe he's
Yes, I did.
Yeah, exactly.
From Shakala to the Libertine, I mean, it is an extraordinary career. And a movie like The Libertine, where he played the Earl of Rochester in the time of Charles II, I mean, it was an absolutely superb performance.
He was incredible in that.
I have to say, he is able to, sometimes, he can really deliver. Mm. On this occasion, I mean, yes, there is a touch of gothic about him, but this is the fact that this is a real-life story, that it actually happened. Mm. It held me, as I say, and you are absolutely horrified by what you see. Mm. And, as I say, how it develops will throw up surprises, too.
The Bridge of Spies, Tom Hanks' production, is being held over for 7 English days because he's promised us he's going to speak about that next time.
That's absolutely the case, because I had the chance of seeing a film with Brie Larson, which is up for awards, called Room, and I had to take
it. Of course.
I am looking forward to Bridge of Spies with an intensity. It's extraordinary now, a movie which I really wanted to see, and it's been postponed for 2 or 3
days. It's all right, Richard.
Ordinary, you can really look forward to seeing. And Mark Rylance told me to see it. After Farinelli and the King, when I was congratulating him, he said that this is going to be quite a movie, and that's precisely what all the reports indicate.
Well, there we are. And he's finally found a movie that's worse than Australia. I think you should actually... not the country, by the way, the Nicole Kidman thing. Not sort of...
What I'm about to discuss next week,
it's a trailer.
First class actress, the dressmaker, you're looking at Kate Winslet, and you're looking at an attempt at an Australian black comedy. And let's wait and see until we get there, because the very memory of it is gripping me, just as certain movies did that I've been mentioning, but with absolute disgust at the waste of talent and the idiocy of it.
Well, there were harsh words. He doesn't mince them. He works through that whole process.
Straight to the point, so, which is good.
I had to sit through it. As a film critic, you do not have the freedom to walk out if you want to.
Well, I mean, technically you could.
But I've
been in reviews back in the 90s and 80s where film critics have actually walked out and after the opening credits, really. So it's no names, but still. I know you're far too professional to ever consider that, Richard. You will suffer the pain because you're aware of the audience. And
it is possible, even, that a film could be bad in the first half.
And get better.
Well, yet it's very...
By the credits.
Really happened. It's quite extraordinary. It happened with one of the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. Awful the first hour, exceptionally entertaining the second. But, I mean, that's the only one that comes to mind, and it's very, very rare. Mm.
And of course,
this time.
Doubtless you'll be gearing up for that little Star Wars number that's happening, I think, in a few
months. Oh, I'm gearing up.
I thought so. So, Claire, the last
two... Of course, there is... Remember also next week, I hope, we will have a moment to discuss. I'd love to discuss...
Richard, we'll give you a few hours. What the hey?
The Commonwealth is to those who participate on the programme next week.
I think we'll look back at the Commonwealth and, of course, the Malta situation. Of course, today, the Gibraltarian general elections, which is why Gabriella Peralta will be busily working for the Gibraltar Chronicle. Next week, actually, Natalie Tuck returns to the programme too, as indeed does Liz Brewer, live from Berlin. But that's a little tease ahead, because we've done lots of that. Let's move to the last two questions delivered for you, Richard, by the amanuense grise that is Claire Margerison.
Hi. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Richard?
Yes, it's been enormous fun and lovely to have such feedback, enthusiastic feedback about two really absolutely marvellous movies.
So obviously Jessica and Emma, the
rubbish, aren't they, really? and will you be joining us again next week?
Yes, absolutely. We've trailed that, actually.
Yes, we just a few seconds ago. I know, it's amazing. It's the short-term memory. Up next, you'll be delighted to know.
Alex, you deliberately worked me up about...
just relax, Richard. Something happens, something here. Michael Blackburn's joining us shortly to talk about poetry readings and more. Here's John Lennon. Absolutely. Positivity to the end. We say for the first time, welcome Michael Blackburn to your first Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
Well, I'm all right, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you perfectly. As can Ian Lennox in the delights of Newcastle-on-Tyne. Can't you, Ian?
Yes, I can.
Exactly. Introductions, because we've kind of had a revamp. We've kind of Jessica Ward, well, she feels as though she's going through a guilt trip because she slept in, overslept, you know, the alarm is problematic. Emma, we don't know where she's gone.
She's just disappeared. She's,
Eva McDonald, probably still in a queue somewhere. But we do still have the wonderful Claire Margerrison, whose voice I think you defined as mellifluous on
I'm still going to put
ago.
That on my CV.
Exactly. See, the power of the word. That's what it's all about. And make your debut, Mary Dancy, another fine English undergraduate. So, Michael, the English undergraduates have reached the majority as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is concerned.
They have. It's amazing. We're taking over the world.
Yes.
But I know Ian, as a writer, is keen to talk with you as a poet about the fabulous event that's taking place this coming Tuesday at the University of Lincoln, with a launch of, as we said, Something Happened Sometimes Here.
Something Happened Sometimes Here. Yes, it's a brand new anthology of Lincolnshire poets, which I think is great. It's about time that somebody put together a collection of poems by, there's quite a few of us actually in Lincolnshire, and some of them have been writing for many years now. And it's put together by Rory Waterman, who is himself a Lincolnshire poet. He was born in Nocton. He teaches at Nottingham University now, and he's the son of a poet as well, so there's a kind of tradition going on here. But he's collected together poems by a number of us who either live within Lincolnshire, moved to Lincolnshire or are from Lincolnshire. And the launch is on Tuesday night. Do you want me to give all the...
I think we need all the details.
All the details,
so Ian can actually arrange for his trips to be sorted out from Newcastle.
Indeed, yes, you can book your flight straight away. Tuesday night, 1st of December, 7 o'clock in the University Library, UL0018.
Exactly. It's on the ground floor. Exactly. Mm-hmm. 4118.
And it's free.
Even better.
I can hear that.
Mary, as you clearly, this is the event of next week.
Of course, yes. So definitely I'll be attending.
That's good. I'll be there with a list. I mean,
Claire's in a quandary because she's thinking Shakespeare season. You know?
Yeah, I have got Shakespeare tickets.
It's the Merry Wives of Windsor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I was booked in to do that, to go to that until this is where you see.
But I might have to come support the wonderful Michael Blackburn.
Well, better, yes.
Yes.
I mean, there are, it's not just me, obviously. There's Rob Etty, who's a great poet, has been writing for years, lives over in Louth. There's David Cook from up Grimsby way, who's just had a new book out called Murmuration of Starlings. Kathy Daskovich, who teaches at Grantham. Joel Stickley. Rory himself. I haven't got the list in front of me. There's somebody else as well.
Ian, from your own point of view, I'm looking forward to you using the word murmuration in one of your upcoming texts, because I think that's what we need, a murmuration of gentlemen and players.
Right, but I haven't got my false teeth in yet.
You're more a prose person. You are a prose person, though, Ian, and I think it's fair to say that. Did you want to say to me you always?
Can I say, honestly, there are two things. Well, one, two things, but two things in particular I cannot understand. One is poetry, and the other is crosswords. I can't do either.
Michael, this man needs your help.
One of my friends, a chap called Richard Kell, was quite an eminent poet, sort of reviewed in the Times and that sort of thing. And he used to send me his books, and I just blink at them. And I just can't make my head.
I will reiterate that statement, Michael. Ian needs your help. How can you actually break that barrier? Break that barrier so
break,
we can actually...
Break the barrier. Exactly. I mean, I understand the problem, because it's like you need a certain way of looking at things.
It's probably the same as a crossword puzzle, then.
That's quite interesting.
My father used to do the Telegraph. My daughter does the Times, I think.
Yeah.
I can't do the Salvation Army one.
Well, I can't do cryptic crosswords.
I can do the dead simple ones
because I'm a poet, so I'm actually quite simple.
But I'm sorry.
But it's all poetry.
I think this
is going to go on because at the moment Claire is going to have to leave us because she's going to have to take Kat away to actually do her sorting out. Because Kat, what are you going to be delivering to the Level 2 public relations students in about 17 minutes from now?
Yes, about 17 minutes. We're going to be talking about brand.
About
what makes the brand and
what makes the brand
nice and powerful.
Brand
and
reputation, brand management. It's just phenomenal.
It is exciting
Claire,
stuff.
Your responsibility, of course, and your mission, which you've already chosen to accept, we will obviously disavow any knowledge of your consequences should you not, is to obviously take Kat over the bridge. And Ian, you'll know what over the bridge means when you ever get to Lincoln. Over the bridge to the other side, to the other side, to the art, architecture, and design building and the room.
Are there certain traffic jams on the bridge?
Yeah.
See, I can understand those sort of things. If that was going to cross the bus, that's great.
It's when you actually have the Vice Chancellor saying, "Thou shalt not pass." You think, oh Lord, you know.
It's a quest.
In a kind of, you know, fairy esque way, really. It's just phenomenal, you know. However, thank you for your time, Kat. We will see you again very soon.
Yes,
and of course,
please.
The listener can hear you in a matter of hours because you're on Sound and Nick's Vision this evening.
I am. Momentarily.
Well, actually, you're momentarily. Exactly.
Very briefly.
Without yourself saying, you're listening to Sound and Nick's Vision. It's so phenomenal. I think we'll actually just dig it out as a special. If Nick is actually sort of listening to the particular production at present, and Nick, of course, would be fast asleep, so it's unlikely that he would actually be listening to this kind of things. But if he does, he will actually appreciate a little reprise to kind of leave you on your way as we actually come up with the trailer. The machine's working very hard. It's there. Still hasn't emerged, so it's sort of sitting there. Obviously, we've got the show, but we haven't got an hour to actually fill on the whole thing.
You're listening to Sound and Nick's Vision on Siren 107.
That's okay. Or alternatively, just after the news tonight, she would hear...
You're listening to Sound and Nick's Vision on Siren 107.3 FM.
Do you know we worked for 6.5 months to get that line sorted out? it was really tremendous. Thank you once again, Kat.
Thank you.
This was under the poem, then, didn't it?
It was poetry.
It was almost mini haiku, I felt.
Oh, yes.
It was like a miniature haiku in its own way. So great stuff. All right, so let's get back. Michael, you're still with us for a few moments, that's great stuff. Let's get back to wrestling with this argument about poetry versus and how we can get Ian, I think he is representative of a fair number of people, poetry.
So. It's interesting, actually, because I knew... Richard Kells, when I lived up in Newcastle, actually,
years
ago. Yeah, he's a fine poet. So I think the key to it is when you read this stuff, don't try and work out what it means.
There you are.
Don't do that.
Well, do that afterwards, preferably after a couple of pints. No, I didn't.
There's a primary school teacher who actually decided she liked one of Richard's poems and read it to her junior class.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all sort of able to understand it more than I could.
I think that's, again,
you've just got
to let it work on your imagination. I think that's, I'm getting a nod here from one of these students, so she knows. Yeah, you just got to...
I have read some Larkin and I did like him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I remember when I was doing my O-levels in the sort of distant past,
were they O-levels or were they school certificate, Ian?
One of the books was... I lost my stylus.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, one of the books was an anthology of poetry. And it included The Ancient Mariner.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, it's a hugely long thing, so I thought I must ask the question. And that's, I learned by heart about 30 verses.
Wow.
I didn't ask a blooming thing on it.
No.
I gave up in disgust after that, I think.
I'll put you into a place when it comes to rhyming, at least. But from your own perspective, Mary, is what Michael say the way forward? How did you get into poetry? Or like Ian, do you also prefer prose as opposed to poetry?
I don't actually really know. I don't really have a preference, to be honest. I quite like both. But with poetry, I definitely take your point where actually, even if you don't completely understand, there's something beautiful about how it's written that will just kind of blow over. And you can really appreciate the sounds and the techniques that actually go into it, even if you don't understand what they're saying.
Right.
So much.
Well, I shall go rummaging through my library, or little library.
Just type in the words Michael and Blackburn and see what magic comes up, and then that'll be it, really. I mean, I think
on Google, I'll do that then, right?
Exactly. Right. It would work, Michael, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you'll probably find I'm down as an Australian laser style sailor, but I try to knock him off Google.
Very strange.
It's very galling, isn't it?
It is, yes. He's an Olympic...
dead surgeon, I think.
Yeah, he's an Olympic medalist, but I think my career is probably longer than his.
It's the alternate realities that always impresses us. The reminder, of course, Tuesday the 1st of December, we'll say it again several times during the course of the day, 7 p.m. in the University of Library of the University of Lincoln, 00118. Totally free. Amazing. You could not wish for better. Ian, you've got another chance to obviously catch up with last night's production from Cameron Tilbury in Nashville, USA. Michael, the first time you will actually have had a chance to cast your creative ear over this. And it's also technically our first Christmas song for Siren, because it's Emma Lane, Please Come Home for Christmas. Ian, are you ready for this?
Right.
Michael, are you ready for this?
I'm braced.
Mary, are you ready for this?
I think so.
Bells will be ringing, the sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. Oh, there'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. I'll be happy.
So, Ian Lennox, what did you make of Emma Lane, not to be confused with Penny Lane, but her parents might have been ironic, and Please Come Home for Christmas?
Well, I'm not the sort of person to be asked to comment on this, because I've got this almost pathological hatred of the commerciality of Christmas. And at the start, I thought the song was almost achieved the almost very rare status of a self-lampoon.
Oh, dear.
But she's got a strong voice. And I'm sure, given a better song, she could be much more entertaining. I just hate the way that Christmas has been taken over by business.
So, are you not going to be sort of sharing the joy of Black Friday tomorrow and Black Friday week?
That's the great day for large multinational companies who pay no tax, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's celebrate.
Well, I mean, you know, every £100 spent, I think they pay tuppence in tax in this country. Yeah. And we do nothing about it. Yeah. And then,
That's because we're British.
I know, it's because we're stupid.
And that's why he
not stupid, it's because we're just weak. We just lost principles now.
Ian, don't beat around the bush. Say what you really mean. You know, exact important sort of thing.
Hang on, I'm going to have to get down from the soapbox and bang my head on the ceiling.
We've got a better Emma Lane track coming up, which you praised a few weeks ago, so we'll see you out with that. But, Michael, what did you make of Emma's incarnation of Please Come Home for Christmas?
That sounded pleasant enough. I'm going to take the opposite stance, actually. I welcome the commercialisation of Christmas, and I'll tell you...
I was going to tell you that because
for many years I was of the same opinion. I thought, I hate this. And I used to hate particularly having to go shopping because I'm a bloke, okay? And unless I have a list, it's just too difficult. So I used to hate having to choose what to buy people. And I could feel this kind of resistance growing up. But then eventually I thought, don't bother. Just give in and enjoy it.
Go with the flow.
And now, you know, with kind of grandkids and stuff, I just go for the whole. I think, yeah, that's fine. I just let's have a good time. That's all, you know.
There we are.
Well, you'll know that there's a Phoenix window in Newcastle where every year they put this huge scenario of sort of puppets and things that perform.
You must remember the Phoenix window, Michael.
Phoenix, yes, of course.
Yeah. Well, one year I actually got a camera hidden inside Phoenix and filmed people watching it come to the window. And it was one of the best things I ever filmed, because the actual joy on the kids' faces and the parents was, I mean, it was what I thought Christmas was about, you know. It was the actual wonderment on these little kids' faces was, I mean, it was just priceless. So I mean, that was really, really, really nice thing that I experienced about Christmas. But I don't know. I'm just old-fashioned, I suppose.
I think they do start it a bit early, don't they? That's the thing.
Yeah. Normally it's about September. Yeah. That's the sort of key thing you want to build.
Well, that's sort of like Christmas period, the January sales now, aren't they?
Yeah, you've got to plan ahead. That's the important thing.
And
Mary Dancy, what did you make, if you can remember that far back in the programme? Please Come Home for Christmas by Emma Lane.
I thought it was very lovely, actually. I thought it was very nice to get you in the mood for Christmas. Yeah. I do have to agree, though, the shopping part and the whole commercialisation does get a bit tedious after a while. But there's nothing quite like just being nice and cosy and listening to some good old Christmas songs, I think.
And, of course, remember the real meaning of Christmas, as many people say. Or holiday season. You know, let's say happy holidays, happy Hanukkah. Just, you know, relax. It's that kind of happy Feast of Saturnalia, if you wish to be a pagan. It's okay. You can be. Work through that. Anyway, having, again, obviously managed to alienate Prince Charles and, of course, any kind of holiday sort of fans, etc., we will continue on with the programme, Ian, because Michael is going to ask you those last two questions. Tough one, because Michael, it's your first official show, because normally you're on Inspired On Air when, of course, we don't ask those last two questions. Next Inspired On Air will, of course, be the 16th of December, I believe. That's our Christmas special. No pun intended, but yes, 16th of December. So great stuff there, which is a Wednesday, I believe. Yes. Just in case you want to write that down in your diary, Ian. However, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I've had a lovely grumble.
As long as we feel as though you sort of shared your sort of the pain the line with respect to that.
Elizabeth, great politeness.
And so, well, it's all
you
right.
You haven't mentioned Manchester City once.
If you're going to go that way, I'll start talking Leicester City and it would all end in tears. So let's just step away from that.
I actually saw that game. I was in the director's box.
As I say, let's just step away, because equally Liverpool and Juventus, I just want to sort of put, it just never happened. It was a fake. You know, it was a fake result. So
Yes, exactly.
So let's just.
No wonder you haven't mentioned Manchester. Of course.
So will you be back again with us next week then, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I'll just go and look up the score.
Okay, fine. Here's Emma Lane again with a more upbeat number, as indeed you said yourself, Ian. A little bit of something. Take care now.
Right, okay.